PPCC podcasts are supported by Pepperdine's Graduate School of Education and Psychology, offering an online hybrid doctorate of education in organizational leadership on campus in West LA with attendance only twice per term. gsep.pepperdine.edu.
From 89.3 KPCC, this is Take Two. I'm A. Martinez. It's been another trying week, but we're finally here at Friday. We hope you take some time this week and to appreciate family and friends and all the great things that Southern California has to offer, especially as we continue to suffer through wildfires. Now, at least the Woolsey Fire is now 69% contained. That's as of this morning. Coming up later in today's show, we'll look at what it takes to get Cal Fire's water tank planes in action. We'll also speak with the Vice Chancellor of New York University to find out why that East Coast school is opening up a campus right here in Los Angeles. First, though, politics in our Standing Friday segment, State of Affairs. President Trump is coming to California. He'll visit areas affected by the recent wildfire in Northern California just days after tweeting that California forests are mismanaged. Meanwhile, Governor-elect Gavin Newsom could face flack from his own party come January. We'll get into those stories and more with Jack Pitney. He's a Roy P. Crocker Professor of Politics at Claremont McKenna College. Welcome, Jack.
Good morning.
Also with us, Carla Marinucci, Senior Editor for Politico's California Playbook. Welcome to you as well, Carla.
Good to be with you, A.
All right, Carla. President Trump will be in California tomorrow. That comes on the heels of a visit by Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke this week. What's on the docket for President Trump?
Well, we don't have a lot of details yet, A, but we do know that President Trump does plan to visit Northern California on Saturday. We're told to meet with individuals impacted by the wildfires, probably in the area of Butte County. That's where the campfire has just devastated the area, and we know the latest count is 66 dead and 631 unaccounted for. It's just horrendous. You know, the White House has been close to the vest regarding the details of this visit. But if you look at the kind of things he's done in Florida and Texas after disasters, he's met with the first responders, public officials. He hasn't done a lot of handholding of disaster victims, but I think this time could be different in part because he's been criticized for not showing empathy here in California so far.
Well, Florida and Texas are more friendly Republican states, though, than California.
That's right.
You know? So I was just wondering if maybe he was on his way to Southern California after that, but I guess we don't know, right?
We don't know yet. They have been very, very close to the vest on the details. I think we're going to know more later today, but right now, Northern California is definitely in the picture.
Jack, President Trump has been critical of forest management in this state. He recently tweeted, quote, "Remedy now or no more Fed payments," which doesn't exactly sound like the most positive note to come on. Why is he really coming?
You have to go back a few days. He got terrible, terrible reviews for his failure to attend an event at a military cemetery in France. And then on Veterans Day, he didn't go to Arlington. And a lot of people were saying, well, he was afraid of the rain. And if there's one thing Trump doesn't like, is that kind of mockery and ridicule. This is a make good visit. He wants to show that he can show empathy and that he can at least give the appearance of caring about people.
Surprised, though, Jack, because I thought he was the kind of that didn't care what people think. I guess he does, right?
Well, when it even gets to the point of Fox News, that's when it gets to his attention.
Yeah. Now, Carla, both President Trump and Secretary Zinke have shied away from mentioning those two words that some people don't like. That's climate change. Instead, they've talked about the need to manage forests better. Meanwhile, Governor Brown has said that anyone who denies climate change is, quote, contributing to the tragedy. Is Governor Brown expected to meet Trump this weekend?
We are not sure on that. I think we can expect it. And I think if that happens, look, Brown is a veteran politician. He's not going to get into a wrestling match with Trump if they meet, because his job, one, is to focus on getting California the money it needs to deal with this. And so far, the feds have done that. But clearly, both Jerry Brown and Governor-elect Gavin Newsom haven't been shy in expressing their views that neither the president or anyone else can continue to deny the long-term effects of climate change, the drought, the super dry conditions, and the rising temperatures that Brown said this week are going to be the new abnormal. They're going to cost the state billions and billions of dollars in the years to come. He's kind of throwing out the warning signs right there, A. Maybe they'll get into that discussion, We're all waiting to see if it happens, I think. That's the key with this week's meeting.
Talking State of Affairs with Carla Marinucci, senior editor for Politico's California Playbook. Also, Jack Pitney, Roy P. Crocker, professor of politics at Claremont McKenna College. All right, Jack, keeping with fire. Earlier this year, Governor Brown passed a billion-dollar wildfire prevention law. None of it would help us this year. The reason why lies in the negotiations that produced that law, Senate Bill 901. Why is relief still a ways off?
The difficulty of the issue, because there were involved in this a lot of really difficult, complicated, and very expensive issues involving liability, involved the utility companies, the insurance companies, victims, and all the rest. And the clock ran out. And getting back to what Carla said before, this is terribly difficult for the insurance industry. Insurance deals with risk, but with global warming, with climate change, what we have is uncertainty. And the insurance industry potentially is facing very difficult to estimate losses, not only because of this set of fires, but the fires that are to come.
And Carla, Governor-elect Newsom said that the Senate bill is a good first step, but he won't weigh in on other potential policies until more is known about what caused our recent fires. It's worth saying, though, that utilities have a big stake in fire legislation, and Gavin Newsom has been called a pro-business Democrat. Do you think, Carla, that his approach will be very different from Jerry Brown's approach?
You know, I think the scope and the heartbreaking destruction here, when we're talking about potentially PG&E being on the hook for $15 billion in damages, are going to cause Newsom to take an aggressive look. He's already getting pressure from progressives out there not to cut them any slack, and he has to be sensitive to the fact that California regulators, including Michael Picker, who's the president of the California Public Utilities Commission, has said he's going to expand a probe of PG&E. He wants to know if the company is managed and run correctly, including whether it should be broken up. These are all issues that the new governor, as of January, is going to have to address. And, boy, the residents in this area are already pressuring. There's going to be a lot of political pressure to look at this very, very closely.
Jack, keeping with Gavin Newsom for a second, he's not exactly at home in Sacramento's political realm. And yet, to be successful, he will have to navigate a lot of different dynamics. So what advice would you give Gavin Newsom as he starts this transition?
Keep an eye on the budget and don't overpromise. There are a lot of progressives who are hoping for Christmas for the next 4 years from Gavin Newsom. But he has to realize that we could be having some difficult fiscal years ahead. Past 8 years, growing stock market means that rich people made a lot of money, which means that the state's coffers were full. But the party might be ending soon. Stock, we could end up with a bear market. We could even end up in the next couple of years with a recession. And that'll mean big fiscal problems. So he has to be careful what he can promise.
The best advice anyone can ever give is under promise, over deliver.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, it doesn't matter. Politics,
exactly.
Anywhere in life. Now, Carla, important to mention that Democrats have won back their supermajority in California's legislature. But a recent piece for Politico, you wrote that Gavin Newsom could face problems even within his own party. How so?
Well, kind of as Jack mentioned, he's got to get to Sacramento and establish himself as the alpha dog up there. I mean, you've got a lot of pressure among these Democrats. They've been dealing with Jerry Brown for years, who's been telling them who's been vetoing their bills and telling them not to spend money because there's a rainy day coming.
Yeah.
Well, now all bets are off. They want spending. There's going to be pressure to spend on higher education and all kinds of other things. But I have to say that Newsom, he's managed the mosh pit of politics in San Francisco and vetoed a number of things that folks didn't like. So that's going to determine how successful he's going to be in the coming months, whether he can hold the line up there from those hungry Democrats.
Jack, final topic here. Three California Democrats could hold new powers in the new Congress. Nancy Pelosi says she has the votes necessary to win the speakership, while Representatives Adam Schiff and Maxine Waters could lead both the House Intelligence and Financial Services Committees. It sounds like it's a prime opportunity for Democrats to show leadership, but it could also devolve into something that could hurt them.
Yeah, and the same dynamics we were talking about in California apply nationwide. You have a very strong, resurgent progressive wing of the Democratic Party, expecting a lot, hoping for a lot. But Democrats only control one chamber of Congress. It's very unlikely that they will be able to get any major legislation passed and signed into law. And so consequently, the challenge for the leaders and the committee chairs is to focus on oversight. And even that is a challenge because that's something they could easily overplay their hands, as Republicans often did during the 1990s.
And it's one of the things, Carla, too, that when we knew that the House was going to shift, Adam Schiff, Maxine Waters, everyone's asking and wondering, okay, are they going to go after the president or are they going to try and work with the president? Based on what we've heard from the three, including Pelosi in this, so what are their priorities?
From Pelosi, it's going to be protecting health care. She brought the Affordable Care Act over the finish line. She wants that as her legacy. But she's also talked about oversight. She's talked about legal status for Dreamers, fighting border wall funding, tougher gun laws. Adam Schiff said this week that he has two priorities. One is protecting the investigation of Bob Mueller from attack, and the other is to restore that relationship between the House Intelligence Committee and the intelligence community and law enforcement. And Maxine Waters, she pledged this week she's not going to be shy about taking on the big banks, and she said she's going to go immediately at the Trump administration's effort to roll back banking reforms and financial regulations. So the sound you hear is the folks on Wall Street taking out their Tylenol as they prepare for her to take over that seat.
Isn't Advil stronger, maybe? Jack, one last thing. The OC race between Katie Porter and Mimi Walters. It's been called for Democrat Katie Porter. Meanwhile, Ed Royce's old seat, Gil Cisneros, has taken a lead over Young Kim, the Republican. That means there could be no red seats left in Orange County. What does that say to you? Real quick, about 10 seconds.
Orange County's been shifting for a long time, and Trump accelerated that shift. It's a blue county now.
Carla Marinucci is senior editor for Politico's California Playbook. Jack Pitney is the Roy P. Crocker Professor of Politics at Claremont McKenna College. Jack, Carla, have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
KPCC podcasts are supported by Pepperdine's Graduate School of Education and Psychology, offering a doctorate of education in organizational leadership, developing graduates with the knowledge and ability to transform organizations for optimal success and growth. Offering an online hybrid format in West LA with attendance only twice per term, tailored for working professionals. Classes start January 7th. Apply by December 1st to be considered for a $2,000 scholarship opportunity at gsep.pepperdine.edu.
Back now with more Take 2 on 89.3 KPCC. I'm A. Martinez. The Woolsey Fire has claimed the sites of many childhood memories, destroying a pair of beloved Jewish summer camps in Malibu. As KPCC's Aaron Schrank reports, thousands of camp alumni are mourning their childhood home away from home.
Rabbi Bill Kaplan stares out the window of his new temporary office just off the 101 in Tarzana. As director of Camp JCA Shalom in the Malibu Mountains, he's used to a better view.
I can see an alley, power lines, and I see some trees. So there are some trees here.
Much of the picturesque 200-acre Jewish summer camp burned to the ground last week. Kaplan says he spent his morning looking through old camp photos for pictures of those buildings to show the insurance company.
I couldn't find them, which was amazing. It was all about people. I mean, they're in the background, but they're not front and center.
Those structures included an animal education center and an organic farm that employed dozens of young adults with special needs. JCA is affiliated with the Jewish Community Centers of North America. The camp opened in the 1970s and welcomed about 800 campers each summer since then, including Jackie Pepper, who was at the makeshift office helping out.
It feels like I lost my house. It's like an extension of my home. You can totally be yourself there. There's no judgment. You're accepted, and there is a physical space that allows that, and now that's gone.
25-year-old Sophie Trauberman spent 10 summers at Camp JCA Shalom. She says it was her first taste of the great outdoors.
Being from LA, you don't really get that. We don't live in a natural environment. So even though it was only 20 miles to Malibu, it really felt like being transported to another world.
Jessica Downey is the director of Jewish education at University Synagogue in Brentwood. But she didn't grow up going to synagogue or Hebrew school. Her 8 summers at camp were her first taste of Jewish community.
Oh, wow. Everybody else here is Jewish. Everybody's singing these Jewish songs that I've never heard before. So it was allowed me to see myself as part of something so much larger.
Why not? Right. How much do you drink? Like a sip?
Just a sip.
Inside the Wilshire Boulevard Temple in Koreatown, summer camp staff were posted on Instagram Live, pushing radishes and carrots through a juicer and cracking jokes as they fielded questions from concerned campers.
We're getting a lot of questions about where camp is going to be this summer. The truth is, we don't know yet.
The wildfire also swept through the temple's popular Camp Hess Kramer and adjacent Gindling Hilltop Camp, destroying 90% of the buildings on site. Erica Feinman is an assistant director at the camps.
While it's really sad that we've lost some of the buildings at camp and that it's going to take some time before those buildings are back, it's really beautiful to see the conversations that are happening between the camp families about the memories that they've shared.
Camp Hess Kramer was the first Jewish summer camp west of the Mississippi when it was built in 1952. Hilltop was added in the 60s. The site has hosted everyone from Chicano youth organizers to LAUSD science students over the years. Tens of thousands of young people have visited for the summer programs, mostly Jewish kids connected to the Reform Movement, an inclusive liberal strand of Judaism.
I initially went because being black and Jewish, like my mom wanted me to know what my Jewish roots were, and she thought that'd be a great place to do it.
25-year-old Darsan Solomon returned as a Hess Kramer camper many summers in a row and says he made lifelong friends.
It's crushing and heartbreaking to know that a physical place where you have so many cherished and precious memories is gone.
Both camps are insured, so they're vowing to rebuild. Wilshire Boulevard Temple Camp's assistant director, Ari Kaplan, says it'll take a while.
We're going to have camp somewhere else this summer. It's not going to be in the physical place, but we're going to have the same people, we're going to have the same community, and we're going to have the same culture, and we're going to prove to people that camp really is the people.
Staff from both of the burned Jewish summer camps expect to return to Malibu and survey the damage in the next few days. Covering religion, I'm Aaron Schrank.
New York University announced this week that it's setting up a brick-and-mortar campus in Los Angeles. The academic center is designed for students pursuing careers in the entertainment industry and will start offering classes in the fall of 2019. Linda Mills is overseeing NYU's LA location. She's vice chancellor and senior vice provost for global programs at New York University. She's also an LA native. Linda, welcome to Take Two.
Thank you so much.
All right. So what does this do for NYU, campus in Los Angeles?
Yeah, I mean, a campus is a little, you know, broad for
okay.
renting space. Our students will have a place to live. We will be in the Fairfax area, and our students will be staying at Park La Brea. So, but it brings so much to NYU's experience and expands the opportunities for NYU students, who, of course, have tremendous interests both in the creative arts as well as in the entertainment industry, both of which are key to the Los Angeles cultural experience.
And for NYU students that are from LA, right? Because that's one of the things, it seems like NYU gets a lot of people from LA heading out east.
That's right. It is our second largest state sending students. And we have 14,000 alums in California. So it was an obvious place to come next, and particularly because the Tisch School of the Arts developed a program there a few years back, and students have been very enthusiastic about it as an opportunity. And so it just made sense to expand this to other schools at NYU.
And wondering, Linda, considering how much China has had a role lately in movies in Hollywood, wondering if being maybe closer to China has anything to do with putting a campus in LA?
Great question. We do have a campus in Shanghai, and a number of our students are interested in the entertainment industry and the creative arts, as I've already suggested. And so it certainly makes it easier for them to be able to attend the campus and to use LA as one of their semesters away. But certainly China's interest in the entertainment industry is intriguing and interesting to all of us, and how and what that means for the entertainment industry. But that's, of course, a different topic.
Now, yeah. Now, NYU already has a small presence here in Los Angeles with a spring semester program for seniors to pursue internships while finishing degrees. How is this new program going to be different?
Yeah, so this program actually is going to be offered in the fall and the spring to students beyond the Tisch School of the Arts. So several other schools are also participating in this program. And in addition to that, students will not only be in internships, and so experiential learning will be crucial to the experience in LA, but in addition to that, we will have an array of classes that we're offering students. So they'll be during the day having this experiential learning internship experience, and then in the evening they'll be taking classes so that they can continue to advance in their majors and their minors at NYU.
How different will those classes in LA be from New York? Will there be a difference?
Yeah, great question. Some of the classes are overlapping courses, mm-hmm. and some of them build on existing courses. So I think, and we're just coming out of the gate, obviously, so this is new. But we imagine, for example, an internship class that is going to be much more focused on the industry in Los Angeles. So that will be very unique. And then slowly but surely, we'll build the course offerings based on what both students need and what the schools see and the faculty see as helpful to the Los Angeles experience.
For you, Linda, ideally, is it a student that already has been to NYU in New York before they come out to LA, or could a high school senior that has now become a college freshman start their college career in Los Angeles at NYU?
So no, they can't start in Los Angeles.
Okay.
They'll have to start in New York. I know we're all, you know, anxious to be in LA as much as we possibly can, at least for me as a Los Angelino. But no, the whole idea is that the education that our students get really starts in New York, although it could also start in Abu Dhabi and Shanghai. But that provides the basis on which they then build using so many of our other global sites all around the world. And Los Angeles fits into that idea, although it's much smaller than a site that we've built in other places. This is really starting off as a program.
One last thing, Linda. LA and New York have a little bit of a rivalry. Just going back a few decades, wondering, did you get any pushback from some hardcore New Yorkers about having to go to Los Angeles? Maybe roll their eyes and say, really?
Actually, what has been the most surprising dimension of this work with faculty and with senior administrators that has been the most rewarding is just how excited people are about connecting New York to Los Angeles. So I think that rivalry is, at least from my point of view and everything that I've seen, kind of dead. And I'm so pleased about that because Los Angeles has obviously so much to offer New Yorkers, just like Los Angelinos get so much from New York.
That was a very good politically correct answer, Linda. Linda Mills is Vice Chancellor and Senior Vice Provost for Global Programs at New York University. Linda, thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care.
Back now with more Take 2 on 89.3 KPCC. I'm Amy Martinez. Let's look to the latest on the wildfires. It's taken over 3,000 fire personnel to get the Woolsey Fire to 69% containment. But for all the hard work firefighters do, they can often use a little help from above in the form of planes carrying water and fire retardant. Capital Public Radio's Bob Moffat brings us a story about people who help fight fire from the air.
That's a really good sound if you're a firefighter trying to keep containment, or if you're someone who lives nearby anxiously watching the smoke plume. CAL FIRE's stable of tankers include many converted military bombers with 1,000 to 3,000 gallons of retardant ready to provide relief to those on the ground. But the retardant drop is the last step in the process. Before the tankers are given the okay to fly, a request for air support must be submitted to the Northern or Southern California CAL FIRE Air Operations Centers, which then call on a two-person air attack crew to scope out the fire. CAL FIRE's Matt Houston is based in Redding and is on one of those crews.
We determine where we want the drops.
Once in the air, he's responsible for communications with engine crews, bulldozers, and the operations center to relay information about the size, direction, threat, and behavior of the fire. He also identifies hazards like trees, power lines, and steep terrain, and only then, if there's enough visibility, will he call for tanker support.
Once the tanker has the drop location, then we'll clear the line, and we just notify the ground resources that the tanker drop's coming in, the location that it's going to be taking place, and then we clear the tanker to maneuver.
One of the tankers ready to respond is the privately owned 747 Global Supertanker. It's temporarily based at McClellan Air Park with a capacity for 19,200 gallons of retardant and or water. Marcos Valdez is one of the supertanker pilots. He's been targeting the eastern flank of the campfire since Saturday under the guidance of the pilot of the lead plane.
He'll describe the target for us. It's all a visual description. It's all done out of the window. We don't use GPS. And you see that rock that looks like a honey bear on the other side? You say, oh, yeah, there's a rock. It looks just like a bear. I want you to go to that rock and stop there. That's exactly how we do our targeting.
Just as the target starts to dip below the nose of the aircraft, Marcos hits a tiny button on the control wheel. It cues a system that uses pressurized air to push retardant out of one, two, or four nozzles under the jet. Marcos likens it to a syringe.
And with that combination, we can deliver the fluid like a light rain, or it can come down like a tornado rain, like a hurricane rain.
Of course, once the tankers unload, they must reload. Much of the Northern Air Operations in Redding is staffed with retirees like Bill Bobbage.
I don't want to sit around the house.
They don't do retirement well.
I like coming. We all do, or we wouldn't be here.
When there aren't any fires nearby, Bill is a mixologist of sorts, only this cocktail is the consistency of runny jello and contains monoammonium phosphate and performance additives that include the bright orangey-pink dye. One of his other jobs is to test it for fading.
When they're painting ahead of a fire, they need to see that color, and they like that a lot better.
Bill says 96,000 gallons are ready for use at any one time, with 300,000 gallons of dry mix on standby. During a fire, Bill and his co-workers serve as the pit crew for the tankers.
As we wait to get waved in by the parking tender, one of the firefighters.
Which is when they haul a heavy hose cart to the plane, attach a heavy coupler to the aircraft, and turn on the pump.
We leave pit four differently because there's some airplanes we load in the front of the wings. We're not supposed to walk underneath them. Very dangerous.
Most CAL FIRE planes take between 1,000 and 3,000 gallons. He says his personal best is 166,000 gallons in one day. While five of them deliver retardant, three others mix more. And then the planes are off again to give more relief to firefighters on the ground and hope to the people who live nearby, cheer the pilots on, not realizing others like Bill and Matt are also to be thanked.
Capital Public Radio's Bob Moffat reporting on the team of people it takes to get CAL FIRE's water-dropping tankers up in the air. Finally on Take Two, it's been a long, tough week, but as we head to the weekend, we have a list of ideas for how to spend it.
I'm KPCC's Leo Duran and A. Martinez, and I can't believe Thanksgiving is a week away.
I know.
And while some people may be preparing for what to do then, there's still some great relaxing things to do this weekend too.
Good, okay. Good.
So starting with some holiday gifts shopping. And this first event is perfect for finding things inspired by comics, cartoons, anime, street art, and more. Your face is glowing,
oh my gosh.
Get ready
for
Designer Con. It's happening at the Anaheim Convention Center today through Sunday, and everything on sale is handcrafted by artists and artisans. So the inspiration is taken from things like Dragon Ball Z, Bob's Burgers, superhero things. I bet you can find a whole bunch of Flash toys there.
Oh,
there's even a cute, super deformed version of Jason from Friday the 13th. So, you know, there's a lot of whimsy in these things too. There's also going to be panels with artists from places like Kid Robot, performances by the band Chevy Metal. So not heavy metal.
Chevy metal.
Chevy metal. And this is dangerous for somebody like me because I'm trying to declutter my house right now, but I know that so many of the things for sale here are just so cool. So when you go, tickets start at $30. You're already game planning.
I'm going to make space on my desk. I want to clutter my desk.
Yeah, there's
with
a lot
stuff.
Of flash toys on his desk here at KPCC. Also this weekend, consider taking advantage of the fact that night comes around at like 3 p.m. now.
So, almost.
Yeah, you can light up the skies now through Sunday in Pomona at the Magical Chinese Lantern Festival. This event showcases some wild creations of handcrafted lanterns that sometimes tower over 2 stories tall.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so you can expect all kinds of animals like jellyfish and koi or pandas and lions. There will also be shadow puppets, kung fu performances, and more.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So dumb. All right, tickets start at $15.50 for kids, $21 for adults, and obviously the activities begin after sundown. Now, perhaps you have kids who have an earlier bedtime and can't stay out too late for that. Well, then here's a daytime family activity that's perfect for them. Tomorrow at the Long Beach Airport is the Festival of Flight. This event brings together really cool displays of aircrafts that you can walk into, tour, take pics in, and more.
Cool. Yeah.
So, for example, there's a C-17, or you can also examine the same type of plane flown by Amelia Earhart,
a Lockheed Martin
10 Electra. Music fills the air, too, with performances by groups like the Satin Dolls and the Long Beach City College's Jazz Combo. And if you get hungry while you're there, no worries, food trucks and beer stations will be on site, too. This event, by the way, is free. Finally, you listen to the radio often, we know, because it's KPCC. You have to be listening to us right now. But this weekend, you can also see how radio is done up close and in person. Tomorrow night at the theater at Ace Hotel in downtown, we welcome in a live taping of Snap Judgment.
Oh, that's really cool, yeah.
Awesome. So host Glenn Washington presents all types of cool stories from different perspectives. The best thing about these kind of live shows, by the way, is you get to see how much time, effort, and manpower it takes to put on a radio show.
That's right.
You people have no idea. There's actually like 3 people powering me right now, all in a trench coat. So this is an event where you might want to get the kids a babysitter because there might be some strong language, so parental discretion is advised. Tickets are still available, and you can go for starting at $20.
That's right.
Now, there's actually way more than just that. Our whole list of events is at laist.com. That is LAIST.com.
That's KPCC's Leo Duran. Leo, thanks a lot.
See you later, A.